Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the podcast. Before we get cracking on this week's pod, I need to take a moment to remind you that registration is open for BTME 2020, taking place in Harrogate this January. As always, Continue to Learn will kick off the week with the education programme evolving to better suit the needs of bigger members. Taking place from Sunday 19 to Wednesday the 22nd of January, the association's learning and development team has put together its largest ever package of education. Continue to Learn features more than 250 hours of education delivered by over 90 speakers and places selling out fast. So make sure you don't miss out on this opportunity to take your career and your course to the next level. Head to the BTME website to find out more. This week, the pod heads to Royal St Paul's on the Kent coast and just down the road from Royal St George's, which will host the Open in 2020. Royal St Paul's should have hosted the Open at least four times over its 127-year history. Unfortunately, the 1938 and 1949 stagings were relocated to Royal St George's due to heavy flooding. And while Royal St George's is preparing to host the championship once again in 2020, golf's oldest major has never been back to deal, and Royal St Paul's is stuck on just those two Opens hosted on the links. Working hard to push the course back towards those former glories is course manager James Bledge, who's installed a culture of professional development that's paying off for the greenkeeping team. There's a Toro Student Greenkeeper of the Year winner and FTMI graduates among his staff. I sat down with James in his office for a conversation about how he's encouraged the members of the golf club to invest in the team as much as they're investing in the course. You're really big into the education and development of your staff, mm-hmm. as well as yourself, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that come from? Where's that culture come from?
I see how important it is and how competitive this industry is now and what you've got to do to get ahead.
Yeah.
There's always someone better than yourself. My father always told me that when it came to job interviews and stuff. And you need to do what you've got to do to rise above the cream, you know. And I guess things like FTMI, when I got into that, and you know, Lee Strutt's always been the biggest kind of push in education for me and the biggest person that made me realise that you need to be better than the rest and you've got to do what you've got to do to be noticed, and that's one of the big things. So he always instilled that in me and it worked for me, so I try and instill that in my guys, like, and try and kind of pass
it on. Is that something you had when you were, when you were younger, were you as into the education or is it something that came later?
It kind of came a bit later, to be honest. I was always really interested in my job and I was always a grafter. I did all my college work early and got it out of the way, which was not necessarily the best for my learning, you know, because it was more of a case of just getting the qualification as opposed to learning.
Yeah.
But that's what the college was like at the time, you know. They would let you do, I mean, I did a HNC, which is a management course, after like 3 years, you know, and like realistically you probably should have a lot more experience than that, I think. And the HND was the same, and I think it maybe got a little bit better since then, but my HND was probably one of the biggest waste of times I've ever done.
Really?
I've learned a lot more since then by doing things at Harrogate, short courses, etc., seminars and other training things, opposed to like doing
a formal sort
there was three in my HND class. And because there was only three of us, the tutors couldn't give a toss, and like a lot of times they were cancelling things, they were just giving you the books to say, away you go and do it, kind of thing. We didn't actually get any proper learning, never learned a thing. I got the qualification at the end of it, but nah, I didn't learn as much as what I think I should have done, really. And I was doing there was a lot of really stupid parts of the course, like learning German, and it was stupid parts of computing that we were made to do, as opposed to like stuff that could have been applied to greenkeeping, like actual budget spreadsheets.
Yeah.
You know, they were having us do other things, and yeah, it wasn't great at all. But I think things have got a lot better recently. I'm pretty sure they have. I mean, I'm sure like some of the things my guys do at college, is a lot better than whatever I did. I mean, just now I'm doing the City and Guilds level 2 with Tristan, my youngest apprentice, and it's a hell of a lot of work based stuff and stuff that I need to help him with. And you actually sit an exam at the end, which I think is a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before it was just like, God, you could cheat in exams if you wanted to. There were all the guys in my class used to cheat, you know. It was like if you're doing grass idents, they would remember what kind of the box looked like. Well, the bent grass was in the grey box, you know. So instead of identifying the bent grass, you would identify what it was in. And it just wasn't right. Whereas now they're a lot stricter.
Yeah.
So it's certainly getting better, but like at a time when I was, I mean, this is, I'm 39 now, and this is when I was 17, so a long time ago.
Yeah. But, well, talk me through your career real quick.
I used to always work in a farm for when I was a young boy to like when I was 16, 17, then I decided to, I didn't do well in my exams at school. I was more interested in playing golf and working on the farm. So when I didn't pass my exams, and then always had a massive phobia of exams and a few exams, a bloody disaster. I went to the careers advice officer and she said, "What do you like doing?" I said, "Well, I like farming and golf." So she typed it in the computer and it came up greenkeeping.
All right.
Which was quite funny. And then I had an interview at Elmwood College the next week.
Yeah.
And got into my NC. And then, so I was an apprentice at Dumfries and Galloway Golf Club for 8 years.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I worked there for 8 years. I was an apprentice for 2, an assistant for 4, and a deputy for 4. So I was very young when I got my first management experience, which was good. Yeah. And then it was a nice wee parkland course, and Dumfries at the time was thriving, and like no loads of, they had quite a bit of money in that, and like good comps and stuff. And, but my boss was young, I realised I wasn't going to go anywhere, so ended up leaving and going to one of the guys that I knew worked in Norway and was going to give us an opportunity of doing some seasonal work at a top golf course in Norway, so got some life experience there. Came back, worked at Gullen, got my first links job at Gullen. Then went to King's Barnes. That's when I really kind of fell in love with greenkeeping, I think, working up there.
Yeah. It was
the most amazing golf course where I worked on.
Yeah.
For a great boss and a great team, got on great with the guys. Enjoyed living up there, a nice time of my life.
What made it special?
The golf course, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And I got to do quite a lot there. And it's maybe seen that I worked really hard and kind of promoted me straight away to like, you had grades and greenkeepers and, you know, I was like put up in a few in my first year, like a grade 1 greenkeeper kind of thing. So
yeah,
that was really good. And I loved the Dunhill Cup and you got to play there, which was a dream, and it was just good.
Yeah. Is that key to, do you think, inspiring next generation greenkeepers, and that is showing them everything that you can do?
Giving
a wide spread of things.
Yeah, well, I'm a big believer in that. Like I really try and get my guys to do everything. Not only because if you're ever short staffed, you need someone to cover that job. Yeah. You need that, but also it keeps them interested and motivated. If they know that I don't get a chance to cut fairways here because Johnny does it or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's like how can you like keep them motivated knowing that every day they're going to come in to do the same job. So like all the guys here have got their spraying tickets, we'll rotate them as much as possible, and that's why we're having this board here. I can actually see, like, I can see firsthand who cut fairways this week. Harry and Ben. Harry, it's his first week, and I'm going to put my fairy more. But I've got Ben, my first assistant, to train him.
Yeah.
So that's a big job for someone to do in the first week, put them on a fairy more. But I don't know him from anyone really, I've only known him for a week. Yeah. I interviewed him last week. But we go with it and we'll make sure that he's so well supervised and so well trained that he doesn't make mistakes. If he does, then he'll learn from him, like stuff like that. But I would rather have that than I'm just doing the same all the time. And he's only light on bunkers at the start, just to kind of get to learn the course, learn his way around it. But then we'll start to introduce him into greens, and then we'll have guys with him all the time. And then I've got like a training sheet, so how many hours they're chalked off, then they can be allowed on their own. So just trying to have job variations massive is key.
Mm.
Some of the biggest things I've ever learned are through shadowing people like Strutty or Dan Lightfoot.
Mm.
And Strutty had said to me, I didn't know Dan, I knew him from like obviously knowing who he was, but Strutty said, you should maybe look at it to do some good work shadowing. I said, is there anyone you should suggest? And obviously not him, like, because it wouldn't work. But he said, oh, Dan Lightfoot, I'm sure he'll help you out. So he gave me his number and phoned him, and Dan couldn't have been better. He couldn't have been more accommodating. And he said to me, he always remember, he says, what were you looking for, the standard treatment or the VIP? And I said, the VIP. He says, right, meet me at Bailey Lakes Clubhouse, 5 o'clock in the morning. And I never left his side for 3 days. It was great. It was, he had me in all his meetings, like confidential meetings and stuff. Mm. And he wanted me to see exactly what it was to be a course manager.
Yeah.
And he sat me down and he showed me how to do invoicing. I did that. And how his golf course worked and how hard he worked. And like, we were there till 8 o'clock at night. And we just talked and chewed the fat. And it really inspired me, actually. Like, and I kind of thought, right, I exactly want to be like that. And then when Dan left Bayward Lakes, he said to me, I want you to apply for my job. And I had an interview lined up. I was working here at the time. I had an interview lined up. I was just a deputy here. And I was ready to go, but then my wife went into labour that morning. So I think things happened for a reason, really. Like, so I didn't go.
Okay.
And then, like, literally 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, whatever, I got a job here.
So you, the management, the shadowing,
yeah,
sort of thing, do you think a lot of people take up their first job as managers without a real idea of what the actual job is?
Definitely, yeah. I think a lot of folk get a massive fright. And I think we try and enthuse that in the FTMI when we're talking to the students on that, to say, like, this is actually like a bigger deal than you think, you know. And I've got a lot of guys that have, like, capped themselves and they've got the job, myself included. You know, my first year was tough. Second year was harder.
Yeah.
But like, you get there, like, you definitely do, but you got to get help from people, I think. And I'm not ashamed to say that I've had help from people, whether it's a phone call or a visit or something like that, you know. If I was kind of really struggling with something, I mean, I've got a great friend in Sean McLean next door at Prince's, that if ever I'm kind of questioning what I'm doing, I say to Sean, you know, nip across here and I'll look at this, because maybe if something that me and Lee don't agree on or whatever, like, can I think, right, is this right or is this wrong kind of thing. We talk about it and we walk each other's courses all the time. And
he does the same for you.
Yeah, we're always catching up on the coffee and that, walking each other's courses, and we discuss things, like, try not to be too brutally honest with each other. But,
yeah,
you know, only can ask if I'm asked. But
you've just taken on Harry as your apprentice. What do you look for when you're interviewing people?
The main thing I look for is if they get on with the team. If they'll get on with the team, I'm looking for a personality. I'm not looking for someone that's going to be the best greenkeeper in the world. I want someone that'll match with the team.
Yeah.
What we did when we took Ben on is I made sure that we came in here at lunchtime and ordered Ben lunch, and we sat down with the team and just watched him, how he conversed with the rest of the team, and thought how he got on. And then when he left, I'd said to the boys, do you think he would fit in? And if they were like, yeah, he's the kind of guy we want to work here, then we would offer him a job. And there's two boys here that knew Harry and said that they'd be good. So I thought, well, I interviewed and walked around the course. He's a very polite guy, and I think that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Looking for someone who's polite, smart, going to be hardworking. And CVs and cover letters mean a lot to me as well. And I asked for a CV and cover letter to be, do this, and answer that. You can expect that to happen. That's the first instruction you're given as a potential employee. So if you can't get that right, then really you might struggle. So, yeah. I think but that's come through FTMI as well. You know, from looking at techniques and answering job adverts, going through the job advert and answering the cover letter like it's an exam paper.
Yeah.
When it says it wants, we're asking for this, that, and this, and this, then you don't go off on a tangent and tell them about who you are and how much you want the job, but it's more like answering that paper. And you're saying, oh, I have this experience in this, like it's asked in the thing. I have an experience in irrigation and construction. I've done this kind of thing. I'm keeping things kind of short and sweet and punchy and standing out for the crowd, whether that be on nicer paper or different coloured fonts or something like that. You know, it's just all these little things to get you ahead, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting. So there's a suggestion there for people for interviews, is rather than bringing them into an office, this sort of thing, and, you know.
Yeah.
But meeting the team and having a interaction.
I certainly don't have, like, one-on-one interviews like this. And,
yeah.
And I don't... And maybe there is a time and a place for them, like, if you're interviewing a new deputy or whatever, but
I think you get more out of people and they open up more when they're outside. This is more, we always have a loop of the course that we go and walk. We'll walk up one, two, onto the new holes, and then we'll actually discuss grass or whatever, and we'll have something to eat with them. I think, like, you don't sometimes don't get to see the real person if you're sitting in an intense environment with them.
Absolutely.
I think I had my interview here with the secretary at the time, who was quite an intense guy, and you were like, I don't know if I was myself, like, because you were crapping yourself because it was so formal, you know, and you couldn't kind of be yourself. Whereas I think if you're out on the golf course, you can actually start talking on the site, talking about grass, etc., and just kind of open up a little bit more, and you get to see the personality, and that's what it's all about for me. Like, we're a team here, 10 huge personalities. I mean, it's a shame that you've never, today, Tristan left a half day. I mean, he's an absolute riot, you know. He's great fun, and his best friend's Chris, and they were both friends at the same time, but they never met each other until they worked here, and now, they're like in love. I try and adapt things for them to make them happier. So when we've done the our weekend rota, you know, I'll let them stay in the same rota so they can have weekends off together and stuff like that. And there is many bosses that would probably try and split that up, but I don't know. I think I get a lot more respect from them and a lot more effort from them by trying to please them and trying to make them happy.
Treat them like people as well, not assets. Treating them like people.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we're all quite friends, you know. We know when to kind of draw the line. Like, I mean, I will let them know if I'm not happy about something, definitely. Yeah. But I treat them with masses of respect, and I really try and look after them. Try and provide them with they get a nice lunch every day, and I fought for that, and a nice uniform.
Yeah.
And we're all very well dressed, you know, and
yeah.
Try and get them better working conditions with a new canteen next year, hopefully, and.
You feed them.
Yeah, they get lunch every day.
What you fought for that? Why did you fight for that?
Well, no, it's something that the club could easily get rid of. You know what I mean? They could easily turn around and kind of take it away from them, like as a saving. But well, obviously, it's a big thing for them to get fed every day. It saves them a lot of money.
Saves them a lot of money. And what's the benefit to the club?
Just motivation, I would say. Nothing else than that. They don't pay for it, so there's no other benefit than the fact that they just kind of keep them fed and watered and happy. So, there's not many places where you get fed.
No, absolutely not.
Lucky.
Yeah, it's a nice, like you say, it's a nice little perk.
But
I guess it makes sure as well, because when you come in and you're an apprentice and you're not earning a huge amount of money, and you come in and you maybe you've got some crisps.
Yeah.
It's an active job, and you need energy, don't you?
Well, like, definitely, yeah.
So, in a sense, feeding them properly is making sure that that time when they are working, they've got the power and the fuel to work well. You know, so it actually makes sense.
Definitely, yeah. They get looked after here in more ways than that as well. Like, they get golf as well, you know, they can bring their friends here and they get to play golf and stuff, and... With our budget, our training budget, we play for all the Harrogate.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, this year it was five of us there.
Yeah.
All their courses and stuff, and we had paid for all their digger ticket and their spray in. Whereas I worked at golf courses where, in my last place, they would even buy your uniform or your steel toe cap boots or your waterproofs. You had to buy all that yourself.
What is it about Royal St Paul's then, the club, that means they are, you know, happy enough to provide for the greenkeepers? What is it?
My boss, James, a bit younger than me, he was the deputy secretary, assistant secretary, and I was the deputy course manager, so we kind of moved into the jobs at the same time, which was really good.
Yeah.
And I can be very honest with James, and he listens to me.
Yeah.
And he's very forward thinking, and he's chilled out, he's massively chilled out, which is like, for a Royal Golf Club, you expect it to always be a military, an ex-military guy in charge, don't you know?
Yeah.
But, like, James is the opposite from that.
Okay.
So, he understands, and, like, he's very kind of on the ground with the guys as well. He knows them all well, and, like, I mean, James plays football with four of these guys every week, and he's got his own little RCP football team and stuff. And
nice.
So, he wants to take care of them, because he values them.
Does it help, as I mentioned, the clubhouse is right next door to your main
room? Mm-hmm, yes,
does that help?
Definitely. So they see them, and I actively encourage the boys to speak to the members, whether or not it's... Okay. They're sitting on a fairway more and they've got to wait for... Well, we try not to mix the machinery in golf. I mean, you'll see out there today, there's not really much going on that's causing much noise. We try and get everything done in the morning. But should one of the guys be standing outside a fairway and there's a lady played at a bunker, I'll encourage the boys to go, so we'll rate that for you. So they're kind of sitting, watching. And then ask them how if their visitors are having a nice day, where they're from, or... Just try and kind of, I hate the idea, and I've never wanted this idea with greenkeepers should be like seen and not heard. We don't want them hassling people, but like if they're working on a tee and ask them how their day is or whatever, and because quite often our members are really interested in the course, our blog gets so many hits, it's huge, and we've got loads of overseas members. They always want to know what we're up to, what we've got plans, what we're doing next, and. Very transparent with them. I think that's kind of the benefit. They made me a full member of the club, and not just like an artisan member. So I got invited to all the matches, black tie dinners, every one of them. I can come up with my family and stuff, and they like to sit down in the bar and they like to talk about the course, and I don't mind it. I did that article on the public speaking for I think of his website. The Turf's Up one. I thought it was quite funny. You ever remember Terry Tibbs? You know, what was it called again? The phone jacker or face jacker or something like that. The guy used to go, talk to me. The guy's like a car.
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about.
Terry Tibbs. Right. Well, that's what I called it, talk to me, and it was a picture of him. It was basically just about how public speaking has helped me. They started pushing me out there, because that's what happened. When we were up to G West, we wanted to do recruitment drives. And he pushed me out there, and me and Jenke, we had to go to a college. And one of us would talk about golf course construction, and then another person would talk about recruiting and another bit and what we could offer. And then we'd swap it the next day. So that's how I got into public speaking. I wouldn't say I enjoy it, but I've got a lot from it, and it's kind of helped me to address the team every morning, do things like that, speak to you, and it's massively helped my career, because I wouldn't have been asked to do these talks in Iceland. I'd been asked to do... That was brilliant. I've been asked to go to Spain in November to do the Norwegian Greenkeepers Association one, which will be great fun. But Iceland one, I actually got a bit of a buzz out of it, because in the first 5 minutes, there was guys putting their hands up and asking questions, and I thought, how can I go all the way to Iceland? I do loads of talks in England, I go all the way to Iceland, and people there want to ask questions. I thought, brilliant, just keep them coming. And it was fantastic, like, they had so much interest, and afterwards they wanted to ask questions. And it's great, I took loads of interest in their talks, and it's super... So and it's definitely kind of gives you confidence, it does.
Did you know that Bigger and Campy Turf Care Systems have teamed up to offer one Bigger member a money can't buy trip to Jacksonville, Florida? The Excellence in Communications Award recognised the important role that effective communication plays in the life of a modern greenkeeper. Bigger members are getting better and better at communication, and we want to acknowledge those who are really leading the way. The main prize is the Innovation and Thought Leadership category. This features a monthly prize whereby if you write an article and send it along for inclusion in Greenkeeper International, and it's then chosen to be featured in the magazine, you'll instantly win a £100 Continue to Learn voucher. Then, at the end of the year, we'll take a look at all the features we've received and select our favourite, with the winner receiving a £750 cash prize and an all-expenses-paid trip to Jacksonville, Florida, courtesy of Campy Turf Care Systems. While on the trip, you'll visit the Air2G2 factory, TPC Sawgrass, the Daytona International Speedway, and TIAA Bankfield, which is the home of the Jacksonville Jaguars. There are also two other prizes up for grabs. The New Media Award recognises the growing importance of social media and other digital platforms to the greenkeeping profession. Whether you're using social media, podcasts, blogging, video content, or anything else to engage with golfers, we want to hear from you. Finally, the Outreach Award recognises that face-to-face communication is just as important as any other form. We're seeking to recognise those bigger members who have engaged with their local community, whether by inviting school children to take part in ecology days, getting involved in local fundraisers, or anything else. The winners of the New Media and the Outreach Awards will both receive a £400 cash prize, with the winners to be revealed on the Campy Turf Care System stand at BTME 2020. Get involved with the awards or submit an article by emailing comsawards@bigger.co.uk or head to our website. Links and further details can be found in the show notes. Best of luck.
I wanted to ask you, do you consider yourself, are you hoping that your team, when they go off and do their thing, when they go and course managers and themselves, and you've already had some guys move on, that they, if I was to sit in their office talking to them, interviewing them, that they would say that Bledge is my mentor? Is that what you'd do you want that to be your legacy?
Oh, I'd love that, yes. No one's ever said that. It'd be really nice if they did. I think, well, Nick said a lot of really, really nice words when he got his Taurus student greenkeeper that had helped him out, which was great. And in fact, one of the talks that Nick does talk, and I've kind of pushed him into doing that. One of his talks, the last slide that he stitched me up is me with like a wife beater vest up on playing a gig on my guitar. That's horrendous. And he'd said that was kind of the reason how I managed to get this far. And I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah. That's exactly what I'd like, yeah, I'd love that. There's a couple of guys in the industry that get in touch with us for, I wouldn't say I can help anyone, but like sometimes it's like a problem share is a problem half, whatever, I can invite, offer a little bit of advice. I mean, there's guys out there that have forgotten more than I know. I ain't the cleverest greenkeeper in the world. I think I do all right here because I work my ass off. I'm very proactive. When I get asked to do things, I do it as soon as I can and put in as much effort. I'm obsessed with planning. Yeah. Plan, and make lists. And I can see a lot of things. But like when it comes to like knowledge, there's a lot of guys a lot better than me, but you can't have everything, I don't think.
Yeah. It's interesting, the planning, that point of view. When you have got a heavy workload, it's easy enough to come into work and just have it all in your head and it's buzzing around in your head and you think, I need to do that. But writing a list and ticking things off, it's
definitely
lays it out for you, doesn't it?
And prioritising things as
prioritizing,
well. I mean, yeah. I'd love to come in this week, right, and just go out and sit in a moor all week and just put some music in and forget about everything. But every time I do that, the work that I'm supposed to be doing is mounting up. But and that's why I kind of find myself here till 6 o'clock at night sometimes. And I mean, it's not like the weather's too nice outside now to be sitting in the office, but like I've got so many things stacking up that I need to get my finger out and get on with and do, you know. I'll plan the rotors to perfection and like all the work that was done out this year with irrigation and stuff was all well planned and it was executed well. I was happy with the result, definitely.
Yeah. That irrigation, the whole project that you're doing, are you enjoying that? I mean,
it was super. Yeah, actually, when the Abbots left site, I kind of missed them because we got a great relationship with them. And
just give me a quick run through of everything that's happened. So
in September when we started building the new holes,
yeah,
we had Abbots come in then, and whilst we're kind of a lot of conversing and planning between the actual shapers that were shaping the new holes and Abbots to laying the pipes in these new holes. So that was the first thing that really got done so we could get the cores on and get them growing in with water. So they did a great job doing that. And then they went just round after that doing all the valve boxes, so they were working out of play because in September, October, we're still like really busy. We've got big comps still then. So they were working out of the way, doing all the stuff that you don't see. And then when it came to December, we started closing a hole at a time.
Yeah.
And then reinstalling the whole entire hole. So pipe work we kept in the ground. And then we just mole ploughed in new cable everywhere because the cable was failing. So it all got renewed. And the heads got dug out and they got renewed. They got swapped from Rainbird to Toro as well. And we had four heads around every green, but now we've got eight, so we put back-to-backs in, so before, if we wanted to water the green, we'd have to water the approach as well.
Yeah.
And now we do either or.
Okay.
So I have noticed this year the approach is a little bit thirstier than the greens because they were just getting so much water last year. You know, but the thing is, well, you're wasting a lot of water because you don't necessarily want to. If I wanted to water the approaches tonight, if they're looking a bit brown, I don't necessarily want to water the greens.
Yeah.
But then you're wasting twice as much water doing that. So now we can control it a lot more. We do a lot of hand watering as well.
Uh-huh.
We have a pogo, so we can go and map out the greens and find out exactly where they need water and where they don't. So that's good. But that was all put in, and then we basically finished. We had it up and running in about March. And then we had a week of testing, which went quite well. And then some snag work when Abbott's come back and just kind of fix little things at heads that weren't properly set or whatever. But they do a phenomenal job. I mean, attention to detail is insane. Their timekeeping was brilliant. They finished things when they were supposed to. They were very, very tidy and so pleasant to work for. And great backup as well, so thoroughly recommend them, definitely.
Cool. And the irrigation system, you're using an app on your phone to set it off and get it going?
Yes, I am.
Is that brand new?
It's newish. I think they've had it for a few years.
Have you had it for a few years?
Just brand new for us. We had the Rainbird one last time, but the new Toro one with the map on it is, we're really getting used to it, and we have tried train most of the team up in it. I think if it's... everyone's got it, it might be a bit dangerous. We have it for like Nick that was out spraying the past few days, he can put it straight back on.
Yeah.
But with the map on the computer behind you can see that it's a big old bit of software, but it's good. You can be very, very particular. I mean, I can go to every single head in that golf course and tune it up or tune it down to how much I want it to put on, so you can be massively spot on with it.
Yeah. Is there a risk? Do you have to almost budget yourself with it? Because there is a case that I feel like a bit.
Yeah.
Sorry. If it's there and if it's on your smartphone all the time, is there a risk of overusing it? Do you know what I mean?
Because you can get a bit...
I
think we probably have.
Oh, yeah?
Well, when likes yourself come down, you're always... You want to show people it.
Absolutely,
stuff,
you want to show off,
But whether or not it would make... I don't know how many cube I've probably wasted in showing people, but after the AGM, we had a grand opening ceremony where everyone went up on the clubhouse balcony.
Yeah,
and I did a program where it started at the tee and worked all the way up the fairway, and I got one of our lady members to press the button to open it, and it was funny. I was so nervous because I was like, "I've spent £1 million on this. I've got everyone out, all the board are out, there's 70 people up here. This needs to go on." And James, my boss, was standing beside me, and I think he was sweating as much as I was, and I was like, "Well, I've tried it. It's fine. It'll work." And it did, and everyone was cheering, and there was some visitors coming up on the 18th green, and everyone's had a drink, and they were oh, come on, Bledge, just turn on one of the heads. And the chairman was like, don't give in to peer pressure. And I turned the head on.
Oh, brilliant.
But we got a big cheer. Then the head went up, and the visitor ran, and we were it was 70 people on the balcony were just cheering their heads off. It was really funny, and I kind of think that's the club that I love, that's what I love being here, is because we can have banter like that, without taking it too far. But they were really pleased, and you see the irrigation system, it's your biggest asset, and it's under the ground, you can't see it, so it's they wonder where their money's going because they can't see it.
Mm.
But they were all 100% behind it. They were all really no, we don't want to spend money in the clubhouse. This is what we come here for, the course. We all want to... Whereas I've worked at golf courses where we can't dig that drainage ditch on the 16th because the ladies need new carpets in the locker room. And that's so common, and it always will be common all over Britain. And that's the biggest thing that people need to look at, as your course is your asset. People don't remember coming here for the shower they had. They remember coming here because our 16th approach is so awesome, and they got to putt up it from 70 yards away. You know, this is a kind of...
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that's very important. A lot of clubs could do well to remember that, because I know clubs that have wasted a hell of money in doing stuff like that.
How do you change that? Because your manager, your club manager, is sat in an office in the clubhouse. He's not out on the course, but maybe he's holding the purse strings.
Yeah.
Is that a case of the greenkeeper needs to be more vocal?
Yes, I definitely. I do. I spend a lot of time doing proposals and stuff, and in these proposals, I'll give them an example of what would happen, not what could, but what would happen if we don't invest in this particular, or what can happen.
Oh, clever.
What positively if we invest in this bit of kit?
Yeah.
Like, for example, we spent 20 grand on a roller last year, which was like $5,000 more than what usually other folk would spend.
Mm.
But I. And then I know that they wanted a new cooker or a new fridge in there or something like that, or but like this always comes first, and it's a shame. I feel sorry for the girl in the clubhouse manager, because she always kind of proposes that she wants something and then she never gets it because I come in with someone else and it's, I get preference.
It's the opposite way around to normal.
Yeah, but it's because they're clever and they can see that it's a massive benefit to them. Like, and I will say, well, one of the things we struggle here was speed on our greens, and I said, well, I can guarantee that we can up the speed in greens by a foot if you buy me this roller.
Mm.
And you can justify, they can come back and say, oh, the farmer's got a roller next door, why can't we just use that? And I said, well, I can justify exactly why, and if everything's written down on paper, written down well, and you can, like, I use TurfKeeper here software. I don't know if you know much about that, but it's got some brilliant justification tools on it. Like, I get Keith, my mechanic, to record every single time a machine goes down, how much it cost, and how much, many hours downtime. So when it come to renew a couple of tractors a year ago, I could show him, well, this tractor's 30 years old now, and this is how much it cost us this year, and this is how much it's projected to cost next year. And then if you can justify things, like, and that's when we're talking about technology. I think greenkeepers need to be on the ball when it comes to using the equipment to justify things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the Pogo, for example, I can justify not chucking water on the greens by spending a grand on a Pogo.
Mm-hmm.
So I can save 5,000 cubic water by using this Pogo. Because I know that I'm only going to be hand watering and putting it where I want to, and not chucking the heads up every night and just putting it on all over, you know, where it doesn't necessarily need it. And then by saving that amount of cube of water, I can put that on my fairways, which means they don't die or dry out. And it's just a game of kind of playing things off against each other all the time, I think.
So it's data driven. You've got the expertise. It's data driven, but you've also got the diplomacy, the political, you know, the communication skills
to back it up, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, and you've got to be realistic, but I would, it's all in the way you ask for things, I guess. Whether or not that would work, a club, I don't know. It's quite as if they can sit here and say, well, you know, if you're not getting equipment, that's maybe your own fault because you're not proposing it properly, but it's not a case of that, it's just that's what's worked here.
Yeah, some places don't have money. Absolutely, some places don't.
I understand that, and that's what I always say. I mean, it's a hard job that we've got, definitely, the whole team got a hard job, but I think with more money comes more expectations as well, and people need to remember that. It's not, they can't say, oh, it's easy for you because your club's got loads of money. Yeah, we do all right, but like, we're, they expect like that place to be shit hot every single day. I mean, like, when I'm on the drive just now there, I would be a bit, I'm disappointed in the course just now, just in a couple of areas.
Yeah,
it's just, it's kind of looked a lot better. You know, I'm quite a perfectionist at times. Like, I think when things start to brown off and look a bit uneven and there's weeds about and stuff, it just needs... This weather last week, the heat and the wind's just taking its toll on it, like, and it's brutal. I mean, there's a couple of fairings popping up in greens there that have only come in since the weekend and stuff, so that's more, and that's kind of stresses you, like, you're like, shit. So you've got to kind of change your plan again. That was the thing when we did out there, and that's what it's about, being proactive. The minute I seen the fairing on 10, I had it earmarked down next week to do later on.
Uh-huh.
But like, we'll cancel Very Cutting Them, which might stress him a little bit, and we'll just get straight on and we'll spend all day on these fairings and make sure that we get, at least get half a chance of recovering them.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you just need to bite the bullet and make a decision on it.
Do you ever go out there and go for a tour and come back and you're not disappointed? Is there always something?
There is always something, but sometimes you just need to give yourself a break. There was 2 weeks ago we had a match which I played in against our favourite kind of group of members, which are a bunch of Americans, called the Outpost Club, and I played that day of the weekend, and I've never seen the course looking as well. And I was actually like, it was nice and even and stuff, and it just looked great in the sun, and it putted well, and it just played well, and I was like, yeah, this is good, this is really good. But then it's kind of gone, it's got a bit scotchy since. Like, members love the scotch too, like, it just makes me a bit nervous, that's all.
Because it's a borderline.
Well, last year I met guys that browned everything off, and it just didn't come back.
Yeah.
But you just got to trust that it does.
But we were talking about mental health, depression,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. How are you guys? Do you your own harshest critics? Aren't
yeah,
you?
I definitely.
And you do just need to ease up on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Say, look, it's 90%. It's not 100%. It's 90%, and that's good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's key. Golfers affect your mental health I'll get like comments about, I mean, it's 95% positive, but you've got that one comment that really pisses you off.
Greens
are a bit slow,
it's
know?
The one you remember, isn't it, though?
Oh god, and you're devastated. And also, like, I mean, it's when things break down or whatever, or you get disease or bloody weeds, and it's just things keep mounting up, or you've got all that to think about, and then like I'm sitting here thinking, shit, I've got this big planning application to do, which is huge, and I need to get onto the proposal for extending the shed. That's going to take me a week or so, probably even get started on it, and whilst all that's happening, I've got all my invoices that are mounting up. I need to make sure the boys. Times are all recorded, and so we know exactly it's the end of the month, so I've got a budget report. That's something I've just thought about. I do a budget report every month, and oh shit, we've not done a blog entry for a while, and I'll probably need to keep that up, otherwise folk will lose interest, and I could quite like to get out in the course and just have a look round, and then so it's just, there's so much to do, like there is. But mental health's huge. I've had quite a few friends in the business that have suffered from it, like, and I have myself, you know, I've quite often I feel quite lonely down here away from my friends and my family, which is hard.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're, and my wife will be like, oh, the course is fine the other day, how can you be coming home buzzing about it, and then now you're freaking out about it, and I say, oh, it's just this, I've seen this and that, and but you're right, like, you just need to kind of not, you need to chill out about it a little bit more, like, but.
Do you think we need to learn, like you say, you might have had 20 golfers say, comment on the course. 19 of them, did I say 10 or 20? 20. 19 of them loved it, one hated it, but it's the one you remember.
Oh,
do you think we need to listen to the 19 a bit more? But then you run the risk, don't you, of ego.
Yeah, so. That'll certainly never happen with me, that's what I'm saying, I am my own kind of worst critic and stuff, and I'm such a negative bastard at times, I really am, and I try not to be with the team, but like with myself, I'm quite harsh.
Yeah.
But I don't have an ego, certainly not. It's the last thing, and never will have.
Yeah.
And I'm not confident enough as a person. I might come across maybe confident, but like deep down, I'm not really, like, it's not. I certainly wouldn't have an ego with it. And I always say to the members and that, and when we get emails. You can keep tell me as much as you want about how good the course is. We like hearing it, you know. It's always good to hear.
Yeah,
and you can never hear it too much.
Yeah.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.